Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 28th of January. Very nice to have you with us. And I'm going to introduce the panel and then I will tell you how you can become involved in our conversation and then we'll get to it. First and foremost, WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm a mess. I haven't been home for a couple of days because of the snow. They closed the turnpike. And I'm worried about the Lockbrock. We are so close. We are so close. I can't believe it. We'll hear about that today.
We'll get a lockbox update in just a few minutes.
But we're really close. Hey, come on, everybody. Let's go.
What is that, Rosemary?
I love how he gets it in.
SUNY Albany Journal. They opened up the highway at 11 o'clock yesterday. Why didn't you?
I could have gone home at 11 o'clock. Yeah. Well, their communication skills are lousy. I kept looking for when they were going to do it.
Well, we did
and there was
no
real
station.
Snow in the Berkshires. There was not substantial snow. So did you ever hear of opening up a road from closing the road from Springfield to Boston? I mean, what kind of nonsense is that?
But that's what I'm saying. They opened the road at 11 a.m.
This morning?
Yesterday morning.
No.
Yes.
That wasn't what I heard.
All right.
Well, okay.
I'm pretty sure. But anyway, I'm only going by what I heard on this radio station. Could be wrong.
Okay.
All right. SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary R. Mayo is here. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And political consultant Libby Post is back. Libby's been under the weather, and it's good
to
have her back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yes.
It's still a little, nasal, but...
You're all in there, right?
Yeah, it's actually all in my chest, but... If you get sick, you get the flu, stay home, go to your doctor, get some medicine, and rest. That's all I have to say. I've been home for a week and a half.
All right. Well, it's good to have
and
you.
For me, that's a lot.
Back out.
Thank you.
All right. So let's go to tell you how you can be a part of the program, which is wamc.org/roundtable. And you can go to our posting for today, 12815, and just click on there. Also, you can go to roundtable@wamc.org. By the way, I should mention just to piggyback on what Alan just said, that if you go to wamc.org/roundtable, well, you can leave your comment and make your lockbox contribution at the very same
time.
There
you go.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, see? That's
good idea.
That's how it works. It's not, you don't have to. We can't say that. However, it's an option. Let's get going on the topics for today. First and foremost, we have the story from regarding Sheldon Silver. We've been talking about this for the past week, and we're going to be having a debrief on this with Blair Horner coming up at 10 o'clock. So we'll talk about it briefly, and then we'll get more in depth at 10 o'clock. But I think yesterday morning expected, and then sort of as the day went on, it was thought, well, maybe it wouldn't happen, and then it did. So Sheldon Silver will be replaced as Speaker of the New York State Assembly. This took 2 days, really, of negotiations, and this is what they have come up with. Silver, obviously, who faces federal corruption charges, is being replaced as Speaker of the New York State Assembly next week. Democratic lawmakers said on Tuesday they want to pave the way for them to choose a new leader in an election to be held February 10th. All right. So what do we make of this?
This gives us some time to talk about it. That's good. after the fun drive. That's even good. I am concerned, of course, that replacing Sheldon Silver with another one of the guys from the from the Bronx, the chair of the Democratic Committee in the Bronx, or the chair of the Democratic Committee in Manhattan, or the usual suspects, or Joe Lentol, who has been kissing at the feet of Silver for years. Kathy Nolan is seems to me to be the cleanest of the group as the chair of the Education Committee without these kinds of other jobs on their hands. Look, how long will it be if they choose another guy who does some of the things that Sheldon Silver does? How long will it be before Preet Bharara comes along and say, eh-eh? So the real question is not only changing the man, but changing the system. Well, Sheldon Silver ran the whole thing. So now they ask, they come in and they say, we're going to get another guy. If the other guy turns out to be just the same way as Silver, there has to be more democracy. There has to be more transparency. We have a governor. I know I'm rambling on, but we have a governor, right, who says, I don't like talking with a committee. I only like talking with...
I found that fascinating.
With a person. And that's the same governor, you know, he likes to talk, but he didn't. He forgot to tell the mayor of New York he was closing down the subways, and the mayor didn't like it. Good for him. Tough to talk back to a governor. And democracy is hard. We know democracy is hard. But, yeah, we have to have more transparency in the legislature. Otherwise, it's not representative of the people. There, I've said it.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much. It's not so much, I mean, I don't think we'll change the system. What has to happen is we have to change the culture down there, and that's what needs to happen.
Give
us an example. The way things work are going to be the way things work in terms of how the committees are structured, that kind of structural stuff. But it's the culture of a wink and a nod. Of don't worry about it, boys. You can do whatever you need to do.
Well, why do you think that'll ever change?
Well, but that's what really needs to change.
Well, you're right, but how do you do it?
New leadership with a
what you want to get the Bronx chairman?
No. I'm not saying that, Alan. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we need new leadership. Maybe a Kathy Nolan. Maybe a Deborah Glick. It would be great to have a woman in that position who has a different perspective on sexual harassment. Who has a different perspective on how things should work. We all know when women are in positions of power, things tend to get done a little more smoothly, you know. And it's just about the culture change. The system isn't going to work without wholesale legislative change, and that's not going to happen. We've always said that election law isn't going to change in the state because it's there to protect the incumbent. But the culture down there is what needs to change. And I think this is the first step in doing that based on who it is that rises to the top. Now, if Joe Morelli becomes the speaker.
He's the Rochester guy.
Right. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the first non-New York City-based speaker, I think, since Perry Duryea.
Well, he's generally regarded as a temporary.
Right. But you never know. Uh-huh. You just never know what might end up happening in the long run. What I don't want to see happen is a Malcolm Smith redux.
Who picked Joe Morelli to be the number two guy?
Well, Shelley did.
Okay. You know, when you say Deborah Glick, I saw Rosemary's head go up and down, meaning terrific choice. I would think terrific choice. You got less chance of that happening than the sun taking a bath.
We have made a step, though. I mean, at last week when this happened, we were thinking he was going to stay. He would not step down. And it was constituent calls. It was editorials. Mm-hmm. There was outrage. And that moved the needle a little bit. So that gives me hope.
And it was his constituents, which is his members.
Absolutely, absolutely. People who had done nothing but kowtow and suck up to him now suddenly are saying, no, you really got to go. This isn't going to work. I don't think it's unusual or even unwarranted that New York City wants to retain the speakership. If I were New York City, a powerful city in a very Republican and conservative upstate setting, I would want that position too. I think they should do everything they can. They're smart politicians. We don't know what those guys will do outside of the current speaker's purview.
So let me ask.
You can grow into power.
So let me ask the political scientist a political science question, then we can open it up. But that is, so how many members are we talking about in the Democratic caucus?
Well, there are 210 in the whole legislature.
In the whole legislature.
150.
Yeah. Right.
In the assembly, and I think they're talking 105 in the Democratic.
It's two thirds. They have a two thirds.
Two thirds. Yeah.
Right.
So,
okay. So my point is so far from my counting, like a fifth of those people have expressed interest in being the speaker. So I mean, seriously, like 20 people have come forward and said, "Yeah, I would like to be the speaker." So my question to you is, when you have that as sort of the odds, how do you, because we're not talking about a typical election, so from now until February 10th, how do they find their person?
Well, there's going to be a lot of negotiating, and unfortunately, that negotiating is going to be in secret. Secret groups secretly arrived at. There are going to be people, in the back rooms. As I said yesterday, and as I'm going to say again today, one of the worst things about this so-called democracy is that we don't know what they're doing, and they do it in in secret caucuses. And they said, well, that's the only way we could do our business. Said, but they're representing us. So how do we know what they're doing? Nothing ever really happens on the floor of the legislature. It always happens in these conferences. And they're secret. And they said, well, people come out and they say what happened. Yeah, right. You know what really burns my behind? Candle about so hot.
So let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about other things. We have a lot of letters on this as well. So we'll come back. Roundtable at WAMC.org. A reminder that Blair Horner of NYPIRG, the legislative director of NYPIRG, who certainly has a lot to say on this issue, will be with us and will be with us for a debrief shortly after 10 o'clock this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Subsidium Technologies, working to help enterprises use custom communications and cloud services to help improve information technology environments. SubsidiumTech.com. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and the conversation goes on here.
We've learned to yell at each other in pantomime.
Yes, right. That's right.
We're jumping up and down. You can't see it unless you're watching us.
Yeah, you're watching us. And then I'm pretty sure you know where the various sides stand. Let's get to some letters and then we'll move on to some other things after the news. Do you want to get to those, Alan?
Yeah, no, I'm going to get there as soon as I can do something here. And from Rich, every elected official in New York State who makes any deal with a person or firm for any reason should be worried. Cronyism has to end now. We can't wait 20 years to find out who's crooked. Democracy is hard, but you need to know who's giving campaign funds to who or paying what to who and what they are getting in return. I just read the letters. I'm not say anything about who and whom.
Well, that whole line about we can't wait 20 years to find out who's crooked, I understand the point, but there's some case to be made that in this particular situation
we have waited.
We knew there were certain problems afoot for a while, right?
Listen, we knew about business as usual. What everybody assumed was that, as Plunkett says, it was honest graft as opposed to dishonest graft.
It was bad, but it was within the guidelines.
Along comes the fighting U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, and basically says, uh-uh. And maybe there'll be some people who say he moved the line. We don't know. But we know one thing. It's led to the ousting of Shelley Silver. So for whatever that's worth.
So
okay.
They just deflated the ball a little bit. But they're a really good team, so it's okay.
But they wrapped it really tight.
They wrapped it, yeah.
Okay, so Konstantin says, has Governor Cuomo now become the most powerful governor in state history? It's a great question, and I'm going to tell you something right now. If, in fact, I think there's an argument to be made for it. I think if, in fact, he gets one of his guys, I'm not saying cronies, because that would be disrespectful. But if he gets one of his guys, like Keith Wright or one of these other guys, who are his people in there, he'll be the head of the assembly as well as the head governor. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a good, there's something to be said about he's got the Republicans in such a tight spot where they are that they pretty well have to listen to him too. So that would give him, as Alphonse D'Amato said, I won the trifecta. That would give him the trifecta. I'll tell that story some other time. Okay. So Konstantin,
you're a man
I think,
of a thousand voices this morning. I like this.
Okay. Okay. That's what I got. Oh, wait a second. Irene says, secrecy is bad. Why not vote for speaker in a voting booth? It cannot be just about the money. Should Skelos be worried? How is he different than Silver? That's the question. All right. And we have heard from Race. I have not noticed Cuomo, ethics crusader, speaking out and demanding change. Is he afraid he is next? Well, I think we do know that the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, has said that we know that he was ticked off about Cuomo ending the Moreland Act commission, and that he grabbed the files and he did all of that. And there have been a spate of stories in the paper that Cuomo is worried about Bharara. So there's something. And I guess that is it.
All right. There is one letter there from Susan on selecting a new speaker. Did you see that one?
Susan? Oh, that came in earlier. Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, right at 9 anyway.
Yeah, okay. You read that because I'm having trouble.
Okay. So in the vetting of a new speaker, I have not yet heard discussed an important criterion, and that is track record. What issues has this Albany member championed and shepherded through the process into law or state budget? And as you say, Alan, this one is very long, but basically... Basically, looking at track record and actually, you know, the criteria being used to make this decision.
Well, we're going to ask Libby about this because she gets down there and talks to legislators and things. But I think the one thing that we do know is that Sheldon Silver, in many ways, was a classic liberal.
Yes.
Except for the deals. So that saying, okay, I'm for this and this and this, doesn't mean that you can vet them based on their past record.
Oh, it's true. I mean, you know, there are plenty of people who are good on issues, but have some ethically compromising stuff going on. And Shelley was one of them. I mean, look, this is an Orthodox Jew who came out for marriage equality. That was not an easy thing for him to do. But he shepherded the passage in the House for a number of years and made it happen and was able to be part of the whole process that legalized same-sex marriage in New York State. You know, that house, you can't get a felony penalty increased because of their prisoners' rights perspective in out of the Codes Committee.
We got to take a break. We'll be back. We're going to go to the news. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll pause there. We'll be back after the short break. Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. We invite you to join in on the conversation, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go to WAMC.org/roundtable and click on the link for the panel. Today's post is 1-28-15 panel, and you can post there. Yesterday, one of the big questions we had was about the drone that went into the White House and about the government worker that was controlling the drone, and there were some questions, and Rosemary was especially upset. And now we can say to Rosemary, look, he was drunk.
Yeah.
I
love how Washington uses drunkenness as an excuse.
Well, they do, though.
Yeah. Oh, I was with the stripper and we fell into the tidal basin. Oh, but we were drunk. It was okay.
Right, right.
This is the same. And he's an intelligence officer?
No. That's the story.
Yes.
That's the story.
Is this why our intelligence is so horrible?
No. Well, yeah. And also that he works for the intelligence or counterintelligence agency.
He works for a government intelligence agency, and at 3 a.m. on Monday morning, in an inebriated state, he was off duty, we should note. It was
has his friend's
42
drone.
Degrees, it's raining, and he goes out and he takes the drone for a spin, and it ends up on the lawn of the White House.
And maybe in an inebriated state, and maybe the counterintelligence in the Defense Department was up to some tricks. What do you mean, eh? What, didn't know he shouldn't be flying the White House?
He was drunk. I don't think he meant to fly it by the White House. I think he thought it got caught in a tree.
Yeah.
And it was the next morning.
Well, he said he texted his friends
and he's like, well, I lost the
it
drone.
It may have gone down to the White House.
Who knows? I'm going to sleep now.
And then he went to sleep.
And then he woke up the next morning and he watched the news and he came forward and said, this is my fault.
Let me answer that as intelligently as I might be able to. Ready? Maybe. Maybe.
He came forward. If he wanted to do it, he wouldn't have come forward.
Think of all the guys who've gotten into bad accidents killed somebody, and then they go to their lawyer, and the lawyer says, you just better go to the police and tell them that you're stepping forward now to mitigate the damage.
Well, it worked. Okay, they're not even telling us his name. There's no charges against him, so good lawyer. But there's a bigger story here, which is that he wasn't just flying it anywhere. It was on the White House. And the White House was caught again with their pants down.
Right, that's they the story.
They did not know.
Secret Service.
It has exposed this big gap in their, in their detection. And the president is not safe. Not fully safe.
Well, you made that point, and it's an excellent point, Rosemary.
I'm done now, Alan.
No, it's a good point.
Well, the point that people need to understand is that, yes, there's radar around the White House, but it's for big planes. It's not for little drones, and they need to figure out how to track these. They also need. We also need to have some legislation around the use of these.
Yes, we do.
I couldn't agree more.
Drones, these pieces of apparatus where people can just come and hover by your bedroom window and
meanwhile,
take pictures.
I want one for my birthday this year.
Okay,
I
fine.
Want a drone. They're only about $500. Yeah,
okay.
they're only, what, $500? So
about $500,
all right. So if everybody does this panel,
so who doesn't?
$100.
So that's that. That's what you were going to give your son, right? That's what you were going to give
premium.
Your son.
That's,
so there you go.
Right. That's right. I want one. I'm going to give one to my son. Yeah, we're going to.
It's a DJI Phantom. That's what you put in your on your Amazon wish list. Yep. My question is something that I thought a listener wrote in yesterday. It was a comment. It was well after the show. It was in the afternoon, but I thought it was a really great comment, which is, would we have reacted the same way within the city of Washington had it landed at the Treasury Department or had it landed at the Supreme Court or had it landed at the Capitol or any
City Hall even.
But any of those seem bad,
so,
right?
Yes.
Within the city limits within... Sure. Within Washington. Sure. I think that's an interesting point.
I refer you to the Pelican Brief.
Okay.
I don't remember.
The John Grisham?
John Grisham.
Yeah. Julia Roberts and Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
That's the movie.
That's what I can remember.
Very good, actually.
Thank you.
Good for you.
Thank you.
All
very
right.
Much.
So that is that's that story. So another mystery solved. He was drunk. That's the.
And there you go.
We haven't solved all parts of that mystery, but
and so much can be attributed to and he was drunk.
And he was drunk.
All right.
Let's go to
how about and he says he was drunk.
Okay.
Is there a difference?
Well, we don't know if he was drunk because he didn't take a breathalyzer test.
That's right.
You know,
so what do you think? This is some mass conspiracy?
I do not think anything. And for all those people who think they're going to take my words and change them around, I didn't say that. I simply said,
he says he was drunk.
And look at the circumstances here of an intelligence official flying a drone over the White House. I'm so sorry. I think it stinks like fish after the third day.
Okay, but if you're out of, if you were drunk and you're driving a drone around,
it wasn't Bernie from the delicatessen. It was a guy from the intelligence operation.
Right,
but it's Washington. They
but
all
if it was,
are.
If it was
they
Bernie,
are not all are.
If it was Bernie from the delicatessen who was flying the drone at 3 a.m., would you believe that he could be drunk?
No, because he would probably be an intelligence official undercover.
Okay, there we go. Well,
okay, and there lies the rub.
Yeah, there you
okay.
And the pastrami.
It's all about a little bit of paranoia here, folks, this morning.
Why is it paranoid?
Operator.
Right.
Why is it paranoid? I mean, it seems
everyone's
so obvious that you at least ask the question. You don't have to believe it. You just have to say, okay, let's make sure we know what this is about.
Okay, so let us continue with conspiracy theories
yes,
this afternoon and or this morning rather, and talk about the weather. The National Weather Service director in a press call said that the agency did not do enough to communicate the uncertainty in the forecast for New York City and Philadelphia, where snowfall predictions were far too high.
Yep.
The director said it is incumbent on us to communicate forecast uncertainty. We need to make the uncertainties clear, he added. We're going to review this issue of communicating uncertainty in weather forecasts very carefully and assess a different approach as we deal with these types of storms.
I used to have a colleague at the Eagleton Institute of Politics, and he had one major rule, and it was never apologize, because the moment you have apologized, you have basically changed. So here's this big debate going on, right? Should they have given us better information? Shouldn't they have given us better information? Now you got an official of the government coming forward and saying, we messed up. Basically saying we messed up. Well, that changes the tenor of the discussion from, well, we had better be safe than sorry and right. all the rest of the stuff. So all I know is that I'm unhappy about the fact that the new rule for governmental officials is to get so far out in front of it as so to appear on top of it, front of it, top of it, that they do these things like close down the subway in a city like New York, which was hardly touched, without telling the mayor. The governor changes it, and he doesn't tell the mayor.
As I read that, didn't they agree to it? It was just the announcement that came out.
No, they were not told.
I don't know. We expect our mayors to do things like protect you from natural storms.
Mm-hmm.
And that this apology, I think, was warranted and was good. And it acknowledges that multi-million dollar decisions are being based on weather forecasts. And yes, they did not do a good job in saying, hey, we may be off on this.
I have two questions about this. First of all, isn't the word forecast sort of inherent in there?
I was just about to say that. That was my point. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's a forecast.
It's a forecast. Like, it could be. We don't know. Also, when we talk about rain.
Who made that rule?
Yeah, I agree.
That's what the word means.
I'm not saying the rule, but if you're saying it's a forecast, you're not saying it's going to do this.
Yes, you are.
No, aren't you? No,
it's
you're
the
forecasting.
Way you say it, and a forecast can be, you can say in your forecast, we're not certain, or as we said yesterday, but they did not, there are several models.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
It sounded,
and in fact, when the governor and the mayor came out and said, here's how we're going to respond to it, you didn't hear any newscaster saying, whoa, you're going too fast here, this may not happen. None of that.
Because it was in their interest, CNN, right. to put the jackets on and go out in the weather and say, look, this is terrible. And nothing's happening behind the guy or the woman, and you know that. Look, no, I think what happened is that this was a confluence of interests. The news media could hype it. The governor could come on and say because it makes him look like a leader. Yeah, it does. But this could really start to get out of hand. And I think to some degree it did get out of hand this time.
Well, and the other thing, too, is we were talking about conspiracy theories. But one of the theories out there is that you were talking about the news media, but that major markets, Philadelphia, Boston and New York City, for the local news is that we're going into a sweeps period and having a storm like this ups the ratings like nobody's business.
Crazy.
So it not saying that there is a conspiracy that they all decided and there was collusion and they all decided to do this, but it certainly is in their interest to say, hey, mm-hmm. watch us, and we'll tell you about this giant storm that's coming. The other thing is when you say, like, if you're planning a garage sale in the summer and you look and you say, oh, they say it may rain, what's the chance of rain? Oh, the chance of rain is 20-30%. And you take that into consideration. We don't seem to do that with snowstorms.
Well, some of them do. Some of the projections are, if I go to my thing on my little phone here, they'll say 80 or 90%.
Mm-hmm. Chance of precipitation.
Right. I mean, I look, because I travel, right? I drive all over the state. So I look, what's it going to be in Syracuse? What's it going to be in Buffalo? What's it going to be in Jamestown? What's it going to be in Binghamton? So that I know I can drive. You know, and we need to have somewhat accurate, but it is a forecast. And yes, I think, Joe, you made a very good point about the sweeps. I mean, Brian Williams ended his news show, The Night of the Storm, on the street. And you could tell it wasn't really snowing.
No, get out on the street.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. Snowing. We're so quick to blame us, the news media. We messed up and the politicians messed up.
Let us blame
the very people who are accepting the blame. The forecasters did a very bad job.
But the other thing is to say, you don't know. They say the model showed it was going this way. And then, like this, the winds change and it went further east.
They didn't get
know.
That message out.
No. Yeah. Also, I think that, most meteorologists say that there were four or five models and there were two or three that did not show that. And I think that is where the
And here's the thing. These
in.
Guys, the responsibility on them is getting bigger, not smaller, as we get more and more of these storms and as there are huge decisions based on their predictions. So they have got to explain
But
themselves
if you get
better.
It wrong, it could cost your city $1 billion.
Right.
Well,
that's part of the problem.
Let me see. 200 million $1 billion has been estimated that New York City lost.
Right.
Because of the transit shutdown and lost business because of this from yesterday.
Yeah, they closed Broadway. The shows were canceled.
From the fizzled storm, according to the Associated Press, New York lost an estimated $200 million in economic activity and their decision to shut down the transit system, a loss that wasn't crippling overall but had the biggest impact in small businesses and hourly workers.
Well, maybe my friend Jules had it right. I think I told you this, that Jules told me when I was 12 years old that the reason we get weather forecasts wrong is, you want to talk about conspiracy theories, is we didn't want the Russians to know whether it was clear to come over here.
Okay, Jules.
There were no Russian invasions last
week.
Right.
Jules,
this
no. yeah, Jules said that.
True. So clearly, it's he also now is a deli operator in Washington.
And unfortunately, he's dead.
A drone, oh, okay. A drone in his basement.
No, you just borrow them from friends. We'll be back. We're going to take a break, and we'll continue. We'll get a lockbox update. Yes,
or a lockbox.
Yes, or a lockbox. All of those things, and we'll also talk about a couple more issues as well. We welcome you, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Lenox Plastic Surgery and Skin Center of BMC. Plastic, reconstructive, and hand surgery, and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santa Marina, BerkshireHealthSystems.org. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us go to a quick round of letters, and then we'll go to a lightning round on the issue of the Koch brothers, and then we'll get a lockbox update. And
wow,
then we have a very busy 11 minutes.
Okay, we do. Okay, Lisa says, seeing Rachel Maddow doing a show outside of her studio really surprised me. During the projected blizzard, there she was, coat and all, reporting. Glad Rosemary is back, Lisa. Don't say anything about Rosemary being back, because then we'll close our eyes and she won't be here again. Okay, James says, also the scientists that do these big storm models are few, like in the single digits for the whole country. They don't have the people funding they need to be more accurate. And Mark says, dear panel, instead of National Weather Service apologizing, I would rather hear an apology from all of those various retail stores who raised the price of snow shovels and salt over the last few days. And James says, I agree that a forecast is a prediction. I don't fault the meteorologists, but when Weather Channel gets millions of viewers and $1 million because of that for ramping up the world is ending coverage, that is wrong. The TV media should apologize. And let's see here. And
who
Jules,
need to apologize are people who deny climate change. Those are the people who need to apologize.
Okay, I see. That's good.
Okay, and Julia says, if Andrew is entertaining, that's Andrew Cuomo, is entertaining thoughts of a presidential run sometime in the future, he better learn to work with more than two other people in the room. That's a profound comment for more reasons than anybody may suspect, because if he is picking the new leader of the assembly,
it's really only two people.
It's really, and he won't have to worry about that. And the fact that he said, I don't like to negotiate with committees, so much for democracy. Okay. And Alan from Liam. Okay, stinks like fish. If so, what do you think it might apply? Who is up to what? Well, we've been talking about that. Bernard says, this is Bernie, not from the deli, but from Woodburn. Drone on the White House grounds is a blessing in disguise, as it is a good wake-up call. Bernie from Woodburn. Okay, and it's and then Tom says, nothing's going to happen because it's Barack Obama in the White House. And
what does that mean?
I don't know. I just read them. Okay. And Bill says, I'm wondering if Governor Cuomo is going to fall from grace just as Elliot Spitzer did. If that happens, how do you think Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul will do? Will she get the support she needs? Who?
Why is Governor Cuomo going to fall? Well,
because I think the premise of this is that Pre-Barrera has been looking at Cuomo. Okay. And Margaret says, New York State has the opportunity to show the nation it can conduct fair business for their citizens. The feds have helped reshape the way business is conducted here in the future. And Daryl says, Alan's stated premise is that Albany is doing the people's business. Hello. This is Alan speaking. Not in a million years have I ever said that. So forget about it, Jack. Okay, and Shelley says, Preet Bharara is my new hero, finally a man who acts like a man. I'm sure that the snakes in Albany are slithering around under their rocks as we speak, looking for places to hide from the truth. Sorry, but that makes me happy. All we want is to do the right thing to be done and hold the crooks accountable. Okay, and let's see here. Scott says, I have not noticed Cuomo, ethics crusader, speaking out and demanding change. Is he afraid he is next? There seems to be an emerging thing here. And that's what I got, Joe.
All right, I have one letter by request. It'll be our final letter, and that is from William.
Yep.
Do you see that one?
I see William.
Yes.
Okay, what if the drone had been flown by a deli worker named Ahmed?
That's a really good question.
Okay, and Rosalind says on the same thing, a drunk counterintelligence agency may do more harm to national security than a drone or the White House lawn.
Another good letter.
And Katja says, does anybody realize that meteorology is not an exact science? And that's got 5 question marks after it and
well,
a long letter, which we're not going to read. Go ahead.
We all know that, yeah. But that's...
Right. That's why it's called a forecast.
Well, no, we disagree with that.
Yes, we disagree.
All right. Let us talk about the Koch brothers on an issue that I'm sure we'll all agree on. So here we have, this was in the New York Times this week, the Koch brothers' budget of $889 million for 2016. That's a stunning, staggering amount of money.
I wondered why they didn't round it up.
But also...
not just $900?
Most coverage
that... Because they didn't want people to have that that psychological... logical thing, because when it's $889,
although
it's not $900.
Sounds like a sale.
In every coverage, in every article that I've seen, it's $900 million for the most part. They'll say nearly $900 million,
or nearly $1 billion.
Right. So, but then what is really incredible here is it's on par with both party spending.
Combined.
And what's also incredible is that it's being collected from just this handful of people.
Right, the oligarchs.
And it goes right back to the Supreme Court, you know.
Citizens United.
What they did.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing here is that this might really light that well-known candle under the behinds of people to get busy and say, because remember that Mitt Romney spent more money in the last election by a lot than Barack Obama did. So in some ways, it does generate, we can't let that happen.
I hope that's true. A lot of people are saying, look at the last election. Mitt Romney spent more and lost. We perhaps were very lucky in that election. He was an extremely unlikable candidate.
Well, so were most of the Republicans.
Lining
up to be president.
But $1 billion can make a huge difference. It can buy an election.
There's no two ways about it.
Well, they put the dog on top of the car.
Right, they put the dog on top of the car.
That was worth a couple of $1 million.
Oh, my God.
So $47 million, stupid. You know, they're all on the take, you know.
Okay, so basically you have as entities, you have the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and the Koch brothers, right?
Right.
So you have, this was all revealed at the Koch brothers' annual winter donor retreat near Palm Springs, California. Hundreds of conservative donors recruited by the Koch brothers gathered over the weekend for 3 days of issue seminars, strategy sessions, and mingling with rising elected officials. These donors represent the largest concentration of political money outside the party establishment, one that has achieved enormous power in Republican circles in recent years.
And we have to remember that 1% of the country runs so much of the rest of the country.
That's
them. Who do you think they are?
Right, right. It's
it's, I've got an election for you that I'd like you to buy. I mean, this is really, it's like a bridge, you know? I got a bridge to sell you. I got an election to sell you. And my only hope, Alan, is what you said, is that the people say enough already. And they did in 2012 in the last presidential election, because Romney did spend more and the people did rise up and say enough already. The problem is, as you have said many times, it's whether or not the middle class is going to vote up or down.
Exactly.
And whether they want to see themselves as aspiring Cokes or as yeah. the
Lightning
people
will
who
strike
are being
and I'll
passed
be a Coke.
Over.
Yeah.
Right.
It just flies in the face of what the Founding Fathers wanted, yes. which was to build a republic, not an oligarchy. And right. the Supreme Court has enabled the creation of a very effective oligarchy.
Yeah, it's true.
It's horrible.
And the whole new thing is that things go better with Coke.
And just for comparison,
it's really Koch, but you know they say Coke.
In the last presidential election, the Republican National Committee and the party's two congressional campaign committees spent a total of $657
right.
million.
It's amazing.
So
I can't wait to
incredible.
Hear about the lockbox. I am so nervous.
All right,
$889 million in the lockbox.
No, there's not. Don't spread rumors, Libby. Megan Finnegan joins us now to give us a lockbox update, and it's a great pleasure to have her with us. We had very exciting news yesterday. Here we are in this Wednesday. How's it going?
They said it couldn't be done. We're getting close.
We're getting darn close. It's very exciting, actually. We're up to $447,004.
Wow.
Yep, so we have 52 to go before.
Oh, you know, okay, so by the end of this break, we need to get to the 450 point.
Oh, that would be fun.
No. I think this is remarkable. I think this is remarkable.
On.
We've got basically $50,000 to go. We will get $10,000 from Berkshire Bank. This is unbelievable. And it really is a testimony to all those people who understand and believe in the station.
Yep. I see all the pledges that come in on the web, and it's remarkable, all of the comments that people make. I love to read the comments. It's really very
Me
heartening.
Too.
Saying nice things about us?
Mostly, yes. Almost all of them.
Not about you, Libby. Not about you.
Mostly, yes.
Mostly, yes. You know, there's a couple criticisms.
Look, okay.
That's okay, because
that just shows
and we pay attention
that, you know,
to it.
I get it. I may not like Big Mouth Alan, but I like the station. It means a lot to me. I turn it on. That's incredibly important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And there's a lot of people that listen that aren't even in broadcast range. They're listening online. I get that quite a bit, which is really nice.
Yeah, we're hearing from all over the place, Australia, China, you name it. People are coming in.
We should do that thing where we have the map of the world and start putting pins on us.
Alabama?
Yeah.
It was pretty
Alaska,
exciting.
Arizona, Arkansas. We are going to take a break. Libby Post and Rosemary Romeo, thank you very much for being here as always. Megan Finnegan, thank you for your great efforts. Alan and I will be back in just a moment. We're going to be talking to Blair Horner, Legislative Director of NYPIRG, to talk about the issue with the Speaker of the Assembly.
And where the bodies are buried.
We're going to find out
really what I want
in our debrief after this.